I'll say, okay, great. So where do you want me to waste money? So frequency over a week is a completely useless metric. If you don't have those other things in line, nothing you do on Facebook is going to fix the problem. You're spending $500 a day thinking that anybody gives a shit about what's going on with you. But if you can make a dollar, why are you making only 25 cents? I don't use targeting. I don't pay extra to make sure the vast majority of my audience can't see my ads. Because if you have 5 campaigns, odds are you have 4 too many. Like MER, ROAS, contribution margin, all look worse. Except my bank account looks phenomenally better.
All right. Welcome, everybody. I'm Victor, the founder of Markademics, and I am very excited because this is episode number 1 of season 2 of our podcast, which we completely rebranded. It's getting bigger and better, and now it's called the 2 Ecom Experts. So 2 Ecom Experts, and I have a very big one for you today, Charo Stichner IV. I'm very excited to have you, my friend, because if we have a definition of a Facebook ads expert, I think that you are absolutely there, and you're in the dictionary, a person who regularly is managing very high budget, someone who has basically tested out so many of the features that that Facebook has created, someone that knows how to manage 7-figure budgets a day. And yes, I'm very excited to have this episode with you, my friend. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, man. Like, I'm very thankful, and I appreciate all those very nice words. And yeah, I'm just lucky to be somebody that has spent a stupid, ridiculous amount of other people's money and made a crazy amount of mistakes, and has been able to turn a life of, I was just thinking about it earlier. I think one of the things that makes me really good at digital marketing, one of the things that makes me great at advertising, one, I have an MBA, so I understand business. Two, I was a junkie for like 10 years, so I'm really good at convincing people to give me money. And I think those two combination of things has turned me into a phenomenal advertiser and marketer. So turning your weaknesses into strengths, I got an unfair advantage. No, not a lot of advertisers out there have, like, you know, a 10-year heroin career in front of everything. So I don't know why I went with that. But, like, I'm happy to be here and prove that anybody can do anything. If I can do it, anybody can. And so let's make it easy and fun for everybody.
This is the greatest introduction of our podcast ever. So thank you for having that. Okay, let me get you down directly to our topics today, because Facebook has been changing so much lately. 2023, I can say that it's the year of changes of Facebook. What's going on? We are having 7- and 8-figure e-com store owners that are watching this podcast. What's going on for them? What has changed, and what's going to continue to change in 2024?
Yeah, so, I mean, 2023, we've seen a lot of changes in Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been one of the most aggressive years of change since 2018. And before that, since 2014. It's odd that it happens sort of on the cycle. For some context, 2014 was the introduction of the Facebook Pixel. Mm-hmm. So before that, we were running, you know, I had 7-figure daily budgets, running ads, you know, for CBS and Nissan, Henkel, you know, working with like Activision, Levi's, Apple, all of them. And we didn't have the ability to track action. Every action was its own pixel. And you could not track purchases. It was all just a click base. I mean, you could, but it was all CPC. It was a dumb version of Google Display. In 2018, Facebook introduced advanced matching, where basically they switched from a bidding model around trying to bid for actions or impressions, a CPC or CPM model, to what they called an optimized CPM, or the ability to leverage your own data versus with everybody else's data, which is the introduction of what made broad targeting so effective and is really the brain behind what made Facebook go from a dumb version of Google to the single smartest intent creation device on the face of the planet. What we've been seeing, especially over the last year and a half, is Facebook continuing to lean more and more into getting advertisers to create content that people want to see and to reward that behavior. And really, that's because Facebook is getting more and more threats from outside platforms for attention. So the old idea of using audiences and massive creative testing and all of these other things to force your ads in the way that you think they should be seen by individuals is only becoming more and more harmful every day. Running Facebook in 2023 like it was Google in 2015 is only making things worse. And the rate of that depreciation is increasing every day. What we have seen is folks lean on tools like cost caps. Mm-hmm. Now, quick history lesson, cost caps were invented not for e-commerce. It was a tool made for folks that were buying impressions to be able to secure impressions for a lower price. Let me give it for instance. Say you're CBS or Macy's or Pizza Hut, and you've hired me to run your ads, which I work with all those brands. I might go in and say, okay, Facebook, what's my CPM going to be? And they say, hey, it's going to be $5. Awesome. I could run a cap at like $4 and then accelerate my delivery and basically say, any inventory you can get me for less than this, give it to me. Mm-hmm. So that used to be called bid cap. And then we got to cost cap range. And the issue is it was not a tool designed for e-commerce, but you have a lot of people using it because it protects costs. Yeah. And Taylor Holiday said, I use cost caps because I want to not waste money. I think that's a quote from him. And you also see a lot of people using what Facebook has introduced lately, which is things like Advantage Plus and Advantage Shopping. Now, Advantage Shopping and Advantage Plus, these are designed to help people that are not familiar with Facebook or not good at Facebook get decent results. It makes Facebook operate like Amazon or Google. You have quickly depreciating assets, your ads fatigue. But back in the day, a good hack in 2017, 2018 was to target things called engaged shoppers, folks that were in the market to want to buy, all of that stuff. Think of Advantage Shopping as just engaged shoppers in 2023. It means that you're only targeting people because they're interested in making a purchase, not because they want to see your content, which is why your frequencies, your CPMs all go up, and why the incremental lift you get from Facebook gets worse and worse.
So you're actually against this. So that's the first thing I would say. So if you're an e-com store owner, then you shouldn't focus too much on Advantage Plus then. Is that the case?
Yes and no. And I really want to kind of get to this point because I've also been, changing my mind over time.
Mm.
Advantage Plus and cost caps are great if your objective is for attributed profit per dollar spent.
Okay.
I can spend $200 a day and I want the best ROAS from it.
Mm.
Awesome. Or I'm willing to pay up to X amount of money for a sale, and I'll spend as much as possible to try to get that number. Awesome.
Yep.
And so what you see people do is deploy those with, well, I'm going to run 5 or 6 different offers or 10 different offers with different audiences and cost caps and Advantage Plus. I'm going to run them all in there. Whatever makes money, go for it. That's great. The problem is that's search thinking. That's Amazon thinking. That's misusing the tool. That is using an intent creation device to try to secure a sale, which is great, but you're never going to be able to expand outside of your total addressable market. Like, I went to an Amazon $1 million seller event. I was a guest at one of those. And I asked the guy, how much of your business do you do on Amazon and how much of it do you own? And he got really upset with me. And I understand, I didn't realize it at the time, but the lesson I learned was they don't look at it as, or that guy in particular, didn't look at it as I'm creating customers. He's looked at it as I'm selling individual products.
Yeah.
And one of the things I heard over and over again was people said D2C companies are failing. Look at Allbirds. Look at all these other brands. And the big debate that we got into was if you're on Amazon or Google or running Advantage Plus and cost caps, You're basically saying you're going to live and die by your ability to make a margin on a sale of a product. The problem is that's not a business. A business is about acquiring customer journeys at a profit. It's not one transaction, it's multiple transactions over time. You're securing future cash flow. That's how you scale a business. Otherwise, what you have is a product, not a business. And odds are, if you were to go on Shark Tank, you'd get rejected. Nobody's ever gone on Shark Tank.
I just want to emphasize on this again.
Because the ROAS was good.
Yeah, I just want you to emphasize again on this because this is gold. Business is acquiring customers at a profit.
Yeah.
Like, this is a huge line, like a huge misconception on everywhere. Like, you're part of the...
Yeah, and what I want to say more specifically is it's not just customers because it's cash flow. And one of the things that I hear people say all the time when we talk about exclusions and other things is they'll say, I don't want to pay to acquire a customer twice. Here's my point. Odds are 70, 80, 90% of the people that buy from you never buy again. Mm-hmm. You didn't acquire a customer by making a sale. E-commerce, direct to consumer, if you have a brand, that first sale is a lead. The second and the third sale is the profit you make from that lead. If you look at Facebook as lead generation on a first sale or as on a transaction, and you're able to use having a good product with a good business model and good customer service and a good customer journey to acquire future revenue, then you can invest that future revenue in growing the amount of money willing to spend to get new leads. If you're not looking at e-commerce in that way, again, you're a salesperson. You're a hunter in the wilderness trying to kill more calories than you expend to get to acquire them. The problem is a farmer can spend an hour a day growing 100 pounds of fruit. If a hunter breaks a leg or has a bad day, they could die. Most digital marketers are hunters trying not to die. People that are building empires and 8- and 9-figure businesses, they're farmers securing future cash flow. And there's a very big difference.
This is really interesting because you just literally destroy like more than 90% of the e-com businesses that are like 7 or 8 figures. Even the ones that we consider successful, like most of them are exactly this.
Yeah. And so the idea here too is, and what I want to say, like what people are struggling the most is they've been taught to value the wrong metrics, which leads them to define success in a way that holds them back and ultimately forces them to ask the wrong questions. They look at metrics like profitability on that first sale, things like ROAS or MER or contribution margin, which don't have anything to do with business growth or cash flow or profitability.
Then what does have to do with business growth? What are you looking at?
If you want to grow a business, then you need to focus on acquiring future cash flow at lower than the amount of money you have to spend to get it. Let me put it to you this way. If I know I'm going to get somebody's going to buy again for me in 90 days, and let's say the average person buys 2.5 times. Let's say I sell a product and I make $40 on that transaction. If the average person buys 2.5 times, and the average space between is 90 days, then I know I get $40 today. Then on average in 90 days, I get another $40. And then on average in 90 days after that, I get $20. Let's just say that's the rough math for this purpose of this conversation.
Yeah.
If I spend $60 today to get that 40 today, technically I'm losing $20, but I'm actually earning 40. And I'm getting money in my bank account in 90 days and 180 days. So now it becomes a math equation of how much of that $40 profit do I want to invest in getting more people to make money? And the biggest misconception is people say you have to be profitable on day one. And I'll say this, yes, until somebody buys a second time. And as soon as people buy a second time, you have what we call a revenue floor. How much money would you make if you turned off your advertising? If you can break even against your revenue floor, you can't spend enough money. Because you'll always be just generating leads for a profit generation funnel that secures future cash flow.
Okay, in that regard, I get your concept and it's very interesting. It's completely disruptive to everything that people are saying online and to even what I'm doing. If we take this into consideration, typically what we're going to do as an e-com brand, as an e-com store owner, is to have many campaigns with different angles, with different ways to have objection handling in the ads, so that I can make sure that I speak to as bigger audience as possible in more ways as possible, so that they're convinced that they should be buying my product today or in the next, let's say, month or two, whatever. It doesn't matter how much it takes them to make the first purchase. And that's my biggest focus as an advertiser. In your model, what are you going to change? What's going to be different from that?
The single biggest liability that you told me. Well, let me give you three. You said three things that to me jump out as huge red flags.
Okay.
Number one, you're promoting a bunch of different products. Why?
No.
Okay.
No. Let's put it this way. Let's say on my brand. For my brand, I have a one product store. It's a two product store, but I'm only focused on one. I'm selling one product. I'm typically having different campaigns with different content that's having, let's say, videos or ads that are having, let's say, different messages that are basically objection handling. Different things that people are having as fears before buying from me.
Got it. Okay, I misunderstood. All right, so there are two things there that really jump out to me.
Go for it.
First biggest issue from what I would consider a classic, very complex ad account setup like you have.
Yeah.
Is one, you have no idea what's going on with your marketing. The most glaring issue is you don't know what happens when you spend money. And let me be specific. If you've got five campaigns going and each campaign has, say, 10 ads.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a good day.
Yep.
You have no idea why. You can't point to this ad got more spend and thus I had this result to my business. You can say, well, this ad got a ROAS, but they all interplay with each other. And there's an omni-channel environment.
That's
so you have no
true.
Way of understanding what's actually moving the needle. You're playing a guessing game with 50 plates in the air. Mm-hmm. That's impossible to manage. Like, it's quite literally, it's not it's difficult, it's impossible. Second, you said something very interesting. You said, I want to have as many different advertising styles to reach as many different people and to reach the most amount of individuals I can. Why?
Out of my target group.
Sure. Yeah. But let me ask you this. Why? Often I get the answer to, the reason I have a lot of audiences and a lot of ads to reach as many people in my target group because I want to reach as many of them as I can. Do you need to? Let me ask you this. Are you at a place right now where you are efficient enough in your acquisition of future cash flow to invest more in the growth of your business? If the answer is yes, the single worst thing you could do is make that system more complicated. Even more than that, you're targeting three different types of customers. One of them is objectively better than the other two, or one of them is objectively worse than the other two. Some of those customers are more likely to come back and buy a second time.
True.
Some of those customers, what we call a profitable scaling margin, their LTV divided by how many times they buy times like the cost of the product and the CPA. Some of those customers are the best for you. So if you know, let's say, for instance, one set of customers, 20% of them come back and buy. Let's say it's women over the age of 45 who are moms come back and buy from you 2.5 times. Women 18 to 35 on average buy 1.25 times. Women under the age of 35 might buy for 10% cheaper on your CPA, but they cost you twice as much revenue.
True, because they don't buy again.
Because they don't buy again. So you're saying I'm willing to give up double the amount of money so that I can optimize my business around a worse customer that's cheaper to acquire. And more importantly, you're making that decision at scale with multiple versions of it.
Mm-hmm.
So my point to you is, what's the single best investment for your company, and how much do you want to invest in losing money by focusing anywhere else? I understand it might be profitable, but if you can make a dollar, why are you making only 25 cents instead? Especially when that means that your operational costs go up, because you have to have more customers, and there's more customer service, and there's more returns and more efforts, and you're raising your operational costs across the entire business because you've decided to optimize towards a slightly more profitable day one, far worse customer.
Okay.
Which means you're and working a lot harder to make a lot less money.
I completely got the idea, and that sounds very rational, but at the same time, very idealistic, in my opinion. So
sure.
In that regard, how do you define your audience inside of Facebook?
With my, like what do you mean?
So you just said, okay, yeah, your whole ad account is like a mishmash. It's like having everything together and you don't know why it's working, for example.
Sure.
And so how do you define which target group is actually working for your business? And you make sure that you transfer that and you target those people exactly on Facebook, because it might not be an age difference. It might be very different characteristics of them. How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, first off, let's say, how do we get from five campaigns to one? Because if you have five campaigns, odds are you have four too many. So if I have five campaigns, first off, we're going to start with what's my best investment. So I'm going to be able to look at second purchase rate and LTV. If you're not passing that information back to Facebook so that you don't know, you should start. If you're looking at lead gen business as I'm only looking at leads, I'm not looking at who shows up to the sales call, who actually converts, then all you're doing is running a very low integrity lead generation business. E-commerce is the same thing. You can pass that information back to Facebook and say, I'm getting sales. Now, maybe it takes you a while to get those additional sales, but it might even be as simple as what's the margin between CPA and AOV? And more importantly, when I'm looking at the margin between CPA and AOV, where am I doing it? Or my CPMs are lower and I'm higher in the funnel because my frequency is less, so I'm creating more incremental lift omni-channel. If I can begin to understand that, I can begin to shift my budgets to where my investment is the best. More importantly, when it comes to targeting, I don't use targeting. I don't pay extra to make sure the vast majority of my audience can't see my ads. If people use like a 1% lookalike, understand what you are doing is you're paying extra for a 99% exclusion of your total addressable market based on information that, let's be fair, probably isn't nearly high enough volume to be sustainable or realistic. And when you look at the results on paper, you're like, well, this lookalike audience is a lot better than that broad. Sure, today, on paper, if you don't analyze it. But if we begin to look at, well, is it sustainable? Or are we saying, well, that lookalike audience updates every week, every couple of weeks. So I might spend 5 or 10 days creating a customer journey, and then tomorrow that person completely disappears off the face of the planet forever. How much money am I wasting creating customer journeys to make sales for my competitors? And also, how much higher is my frequency? Meaning, how many fewer people am I reaching? How much detriment am I giving to my more profitable channels by reaching far fewer people? If you run lookalikes and interest groups, odds are your Google search and your email revenue are far less than they could be. I'd argue that email and Google are far more profitable than Facebook. So how much are you spending to make sure that your far more effective and profitable marketing channels get far less volume because your least effective marketing channel wants to look better? So ultimately, this comes down to broad targeting, which means age, gender, location. Those are the only three parameters where you don't pay extra to rent information from Facebook or third-party individuals. Mm-hmm. And then the ads that do the work at creating results that are good for your business are the ones you want to keep on. So ultimately, we can start with CPA and AOV margins if you want to go there. Awesome. The ones that do the best, we're going to get rid of the ones that are worst. So the ones that are doing the best, we're going to keep around. From there, when we've eliminated 40% of our ads, we can begin to take a look at what ads are doing the same job And if we have ads doing the same job, which ones are doing more or less effectively? This is what we call a 4PI analysis. Spend, frequency, CPM, and efficiency. If I have two ads that are basically being used as by Facebook as mid-funnel, i.e., my CPM's a bit above my average cost, and my daily frequency is between like a 1.15 and a 1.25, meaning Facebook is spending 20% of my dollars retargeting people every single day. And by the way, frequency only matters when you break down by day. Other than that, it's completely useless. If I have two ads that are doing that, and one of them has a lower CPA or a lower CPM, they're both doing the same job, let me fire the worst employee. Eventually, I'm going to get down to a portfolio of investments that's maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 moving parts. And then it's very easy for me to say, I'm going to launch a creative test. If it earns spend, what happens to my omni-channel unit economics? If it improves them, I don't care what the CPA is on Facebook. If it makes it worse, I don't care what the ROAS is on Facebook, because I'm trying to make money. And making money understands that means you have to understand that Facebook is not a closed environment. And Facebook's job in the marketing mix is ultimately to amplify the volume of opportunity for more efficient channels. And yeah, you want to make sales and do all that stuff. But business is, if you're trying to sell a product at a profit with the expectation of no future cash flow, you are a salesman with the product, and eventually you will lose the game. You cannot win that game. Being the second cheapest product isn't a point of strength. And if you are selling a single product with no future cash flow, somebody on Amazon, somebody on Google, somebody with a VC-backed company, you have no protection, you are not unique, and you will die. So you can make the choice right now to invest heavily in something that's going to fail, or you can make the choice to look at it as a business where you're making an investment in the future and begin to grow things in a sustainable, projectable way. So I think that's maybe a more elaborate answer to your question than maybe you were asking for, but ultimately, the real answer is I don't care, because it doesn't matter. And you can't know.
It's very interesting, because everything that you just brought up, and I let you complete your thought, because I think it's very important for our listeners and viewers to understand your logic behind all of this. Because if you only have it as just claims or like whatever, as like statements, it's just not going to make it. But I like your logic, and I like where you're going with all of this. And for me, it does make a lot of sense. And quite interesting. You said that you should only look at frequencies by the day. Mm-hmm. How do you look at frequencies, and like what are your benchmarks on that?
So frequency over a week is a completely useless metric. People will be like, oh, well, I have a frequency of 2 over a week. So you're telling me somebody gets shown your ad once every 3.5 days, and odds are they don't even know that they've seen it till they've seen it 8 or 9 times? Unless your frequency is like a 20, there's no actionability to that data, so it's completely useless. However, it does become actionable when you look at it by day. You know, breakdown, delivery, day, right?
Yep.
Simple benchmarks. 1.00 to 1.15 is basically top of funnel. It means that less than 15% of my budget is spent on retargeting people today, intraday, with this ad. Generally speaking, 1.15 to 1.25 or so, that is a mid-funnel ad. Any ad that's over like a 1.25, 1.35, that's bottom funnel. Like if your daily frequency is like a 1.4, 1.5, that means that 50% of people are seeing your ad twice today. That's a lot of retargeting going on. If it was only 10% instead of 50%, you'd be reaching a phenomenally higher number of individuals, meaning your opportunity to make a sale grows exponentially. Instead of trying to force your messaging with Facebook onto one person, knowing that most people have already made the decision to not buy. And I'd rather start as many conversations as I can with my intent creation device. and then let the rest of my business operate than to try to
force transactions. Like, what do you mean by that? Like, it's very interesting because you said, okay, I need one campaign in general. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to have too much. Then I see that this happening in my ad account. What am I changing this then?
Yeah, so ultimately Facebook is, you have to think of Facebook as an intent creation device. It is not the thing that secures a sale. It can be, but ultimately Facebook is, let me rephrase that. Facebook is an intent creation device. It is not the thing that secures a sale. Your business is, your website is, your products are. Facebook is the thing that gets somebody that doesn't know about you to be interested in potentially learning more. You can't force somebody to buy because your ad is good. Nobody's going to buy because you tell them to. Facebook's job is not to bang on somebody's door twice a day, every single day, until they open the door and buy your like vacuum cleaner or something like that. All you're doing is pissing people off. If instead of pissing off 1,000 people a day, you could reach 2,000 new people every single day, and you also had the ability for them to be like, oh, this is interesting. Let me go to the website. Let me go to the store. Let me look it up. You're going to make way more sales by knocking on 2,000 doors than to knock on 1,000 where 950 of them have already told you they're not interested. So we have to start looking at it like that. You are creating intent and awareness and understanding for your business, not even for your product or solution. Like, if you're selling shoes, the idea of making an ad that makes somebody problem aware is dumb. People have been buying shoes for decades. The flow of problem aware, solution aware, product aware makes no sense. People are going to see your ads because they're in the market. The reason you're seeing a sneaker ad is because you've already clicked on content around it. You've been to a store. You've walked into a store that sells sneakers in the real world. Because yep. Facebook knows your location. They've seen that your phone pinged this Bluetooth point of sale device, but you didn't buy. They know that you were buying sneakers around this time of year every other year. They know that over the last 3 to 6 months, you've been buying healthier and healthier food. They know that all of your friends are spending money on health products. They know you're in the market for some nice trainers. And if they know what kind of landing pages you've been on, because Facebook Pixel is there, they're seeing the color and the textiles and the overall just like architecture and style and whatever else about the business, about the shoe that you're looking for. So the ad you're going to see is going to be the one based on your intent. That could be a first-time impression, but it's a bottom-of-funnel retargeting ad based on somebody's customer journey that's ultimately generally weeks, months, or decades long.
Exactly a bottom-of-the-funnel then retargeting, absolutely.
Yeah, but in your mind, on your Facebook dashboard, that could be broad audience, 1.05 daily frequency with the lowest CPM in your ad account.
Yeah. But in reality, in the real life, it's a bottom of the funnel.
Yeah, in the real life, it's bottom of the funnel. The idea of having a funnel within Facebook is one that became obsolete 5 years ago. Because Facebook is smart enough to know all of these things about people. You have to understand, like, Facebook has trillions and trillions of data points on literally billions of people going back over a decade. The behavior models that it has on individuals to understand how to curate their behavior and influence their decision-making is unmatched in the history of all humanity. All you have to do is make content that people want to see more than your competitors. You're going to show up earlier in their feed to more people. And if your content is good enough to get somebody interested, and then your website and product and business are strong enough to earn their trust and future transactions, you're going to make a lot of money. If you don't have those other things in line, nothing you do on Facebook is going to fix the problem. And I'd say, honestly, 70, 80% of people that struggle on Facebook that I see have an issue that is not Facebook related, but they're amplifying that problem by using Facebook like it was Google 10 years ago.
Quite interesting. And in that regard, since you said that you have to look into it as an intent generation, something that you're just going to bring people up. Do you ever, in any case, consider running any ads that are not optimized for purchases?
Very rarely. I mean, I think there are use cases for it. But we have to be very specific on what those are. Like, I'll run e-commerce stuff where we're optimizing for is email capture.
Okay.
Like, that can make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does make. I mean, it's again a lead, so it's okay.
Yeah, it's a lead, right? I mean, a sale is a lead. But, like, I work with one brand, this guy out of he went through the Facebook Ads MBA program and came through Disruptor School, and he's got a bespoke fly fishing rod company. Product costs like $1,200.
Mm-hmm.
We fundamentally changed the future of his business by focusing on how to get an email for lower than the value of an email. And we can spend 5 figures a day getting new people to join his email list. Let's say, for instance, the average subscriber is worth $40.
Okay.
If we can get him for 15, we're going to triple money.
You're making so much money out of that. Yeah.
So, yes, there are reasons why I might not use a conversion objective.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, the vast majority of money spent on Facebook isn't conversion objective at all.
No. But for e-com, like, it is.
Yeah, for e-com it is, but e-com represents like less than 5 or 10% of the money spent on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a small piece.
We think that the whole world is oriented towards it. We think that the whole world is like, we think that the art is like going around it.
Yeah. And like, we have to remember that, like, you know, a decade ago, I was dropping 7 figures a day on interest groups, not to try to do targeting, but ultimately to understand the market research. So when I was promoting like shows for CBS television,
mm-hmm.
I would do a bunch of different interest groups, a bunch of different demographics, a bunch of different behaviors. So that I could go to CBS and say, these are the demographics that are most interested in your product. You can now go to advertisers with data to say, your market likes our show.
Yeah.
Buy advertising from us. And it might cost me $1 million or $2 million in a week to secure $10, $20 million in commercials bought over the course of a season across the United States. That's a tremendous profit margin. And you have to understand that that's happening where billion-dollar companies are fighting for share of voice, and you're spending $500 a day thinking that anybody gives a shit about what's going on with you. And you should care about things that actually matter for the success of your business way more than trying to compete with folks that don't even care about you, because your biggest success is a rounding error on an hour of their ad delivery.
Okay, quite interesting. If we get back to the typical, let's say, purchase conversion optimizations, when you go into a new ad account that you haven't seen, what are the first thing that you look at?
First thing that I'll do is I'll ask the client, I'll try to build out PSM models for their products. Like, I want to know what's my target platform CPA for Facebook, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, where am I winning and where am I losing? The very first thing you have to do when you're taking over any business is understand where the money is going and what you're getting in return for it.
Mm-hmm.
So number one, first step every single time is I build out what we call a scrum doc. And I want to understand the investment and the return by every business objective and every effort inside of my ad account and across the business. From there, I'm going to understand my strengths, my weaknesses, where opportunities are coming in and what threats are happening. And I can begin to shift my budget allocation where my money is best for my business. I've easily 2 or 3x brands just by changing where the money goes. And then working on creative testing, once you know that data, to make that portfolio of assets that you're investing with more powerful for your business objectives. I think if somebody takes over an ad account and the very first thing they do isn't to understand your finances, that person doesn't have the bottom line of your business as ultimately the primary KPI.
Yeah, and because that's like a lot of sensitive stuff that typically businesses are not like okay with sharing. Because I have an agency, we work with many different clients, and like If I start asking this, they'll be like, that's none of your business.
Sure. And if somebody says it's none of your business, I'll say, okay, great. So where do you want me to waste money? How much money do you want to lose by not giving me the information I need to make you money? And if you don't want to tell me, then give me my CPA targets. Mm-hmm. And then they'll be like, yes, great, and we'll do this, and then you promote these five things. I'm like, awesome. I'll promote this one, and we can go lose money in these other four places. How much money do you want to lose? And I don't think people talk to clients like that, but I won't take clients. I won't work with brands that aren't willing to talk like that. And I think when you begin to speak to businesses as you're the only person on your team, the person on your team I'm most concerned with is the finance department. You're paying me to generate profit volume. I can make a report that looks good. I can test 1,000 ads to make sure that, like, we just see higher and higher CPMs in the platform and we lose more and more market share and we basically work really, really hard so your business is destroyed. Or we can focus on why you're opening business in the first place, which is you decided at one point to not have a day job. And the way you make that need for a day job or being homeless, the way you push that off another day is by making more money and generating more opportunity for yourself, for your business, for your family, for your community. Like, that's what it's all about. So the first thing that I do is I break down the unit economics because I want to know how best to be an investment banker. Otherwise, I'm a vanity metrics salesman. And when you leave my agency because your business is worse off because we did business together, and it's not really my fault, like you might not have given me that information, but when that happens, you're probably going to look at me as though I didn't do a good job, and I'm going to look at you as though you were a bad client, and we're going to go off and basically continue to do harm to others as a standard operating procedure. And I think that like you can overcome that by focusing on what actually matters. And so, like, I know I'm being kind of hyperbolic with this, but, like, I don't think people realize, intellectually they might, but I don't think people take into account the fact that there are real people at the end of those dollars spent, and there's food on the table and families and dreams that depend on the end result of our work being done. And ultimately, advertising, marketing in general, is about the creation of opportunity. And business is about the monetization of that opportunity that you've created. Outside of that, it's just stuff to keep yourself busy and feel good about yourself. But I'm far, like, you can do that and make money. So why not do that and make money so you can create jobs and opportunities and feel more secure and have a happier life?
Okay.
By the way, also, doing it my way, a lot simpler, a lot easier. I can manage millions of dollars a week. I actively right now manage a couple million a week, and it takes me maybe 90 minutes active time a week to manage $4 to $6 million spend monthly because I've already set up the business to be successful. All I need to do is understand what threats are coming, project my, get better and better at understanding my consumer, and then doing some testing to make sure that I'm ahead of the problems. So when the question comes, can I increase my budget? My answer is always yes. And if it's no, I know why, and I can plan for it, and I know it's going to happen weeks in advance. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're just reacting to information that doesn't have value so that we can dig a deeper hole. And brands that work like that and advertisers that work like that, in my experience, are more reliant on salespeople than their customers to generate revenue. And if you need salespeople instead of customers to generate revenue, odds are your future is not bright.
Okay, that's quite interesting. So once you get that financial background and you get all of that, what's the next steps in the ad account?
So first step, understand, I mean, really, I can really lay out the whole 9-step process.
Go for it.
And this is in the Facebook Ads MBA program, by the way, not trying to sell, but just like in my agency training and media buyer and business development program, where I teach people how to run stuff like I do, it's built around 9 core steps. First, we take inventory of your investment portfolio. Second, we begin to invest our money where it's actually better for the business. Third, we begin doing creative testing to improve the assets that we're using to leverage that opportunity. Fourth, while that's happening, we get our nomenclature together so we can understand what's actually going on so that anybody at any time can look at anything and you don't need emails and phone calls and all sorts of other nonsense getting in the way of actually just making money. Fifth, we take action from that creative test. We understand the impact on our business. Sixth, we begin to look at the impacts of Facebook versus the entire omnichannel marketing. Like once we get Facebook stable and projectable and easy to manage down to a couple hours a week, or as we're on that road, we can begin to see, well, what happens to Google? What happens to email? What happens to search? What happens to Amazon? What happens omnichannel because of our marketing effort? Then we can begin to plan what kind of tests we want to run in the future, knowing all the information that we have, since we're not reactionary, we can be proactive. What does that look like? Then we can begin to project manage those tests, understanding what our dependencies are, what our objectives are, and defining what success looks like. Like, I want to know if the engineering team is putting up a call to action or a pop-up or some sort of thing on the mobile experience, and it might, like, screw the add to cart button. Like, I don't know a single person that's been in the business for more than 2-3 years that hasn't seen some fun Shopify add-on that makes it so that nobody can buy. Like that happens to everybody at least once.
Yep.
And then from that, we can make a 30, 60, 90 day plan. So we have a very clear idea of where we're going. And to be fair, that plan's going to change because nobody's right. But you're going to have directional data and you're going to have a definition of success based on metrics that align with your bank account. So you can ultimately have a plan with full accountability and transparency. Like that should be achievable in 8 to 10 weeks. And if you get all of that stuff in line, you're going to have a very clear idea if the future is bright or not and what you need to do either way.
Okay. I have another question that's a scenario question that we had from some people. That I told them I'm going to be speaking to you.
And okay.
They were like, I'm spending right now $5,000 a day on ads, or I have $5,000 a day to spend on ads. And I have an e-com store. I'm typically like having like 20-25% profit margin when I'm running the ads and so on and so forth on my whole ad account. What would you do if you were the one that has that budget? It's not a big one. It's maybe like a small to a medium-sized e-com store right now. What would you do in that regard?
Yeah, so if I'm spending a couple thousand a day and I've got a general like 25% profit margin, I'm assuming that's probably an MER or contribution margin or ROAS number. Like it's not a cash flow projection. It's basically I'm making...
Yeah, it's a ROAS.
Okay, it's a ROAS. So... first thing I want to do is understand what's actually happening in the business. I want to understand what my real profitability looks like. And I want to understand future behavior. So, okay, I double my money, but this person never buys again, or I get 20% profit and somebody buys 3 more times. I want to know what that looks like. First thing, and that's super easy to do. New customers versus repeat, return customers, index it out by product, understand the LTV.
Would you even work if companies are not having more than, let's say, 10% repeat customer rate?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Because 10% of repeat customers means you probably have a large amount of people will buy a lot of times. Or if it's like, if there is a problem in the business, then you have to fix the business. Like sometimes the best way to make more money is improve. Like one of the easiest things that nobody talks about that is the simplest way of moving a business forward is to improve the second purchase rate.
Yeah.
You say 10% of people buy a second, 10% repeat purchase rate.
Yeah.
Probably means it's closer to like 5 or 6% of people buy more than once. And the people that do buy a few times. Mm-hmm. How do I get it from 5% of people buy twice to 10? That's way more important. No audience on Facebook, no creative test, no cost caps or Advantage Plus is going to fix that problem. That problem could easily double your bottom line. Fix that. That's what really matters. And ultimately what we find with that is, well, if you're selling 10 different products, probably one of them has a 30% second purchase rate and the others have like a 2. That's hyperbolic, But like the point is, like, what is that situation that sets you up for success? And can we lean into that? Let's say, for instance, though, that actually you're making 25% profit margin on every customer journey. Awesome. Mm-hmm. I want to understand how much of that are we comfortable reinvesting in the growth of the business. If you're making a 25% profit margin, my argument to you would be, are you okay with losing 20 cents on the dollar at the front end of this customer journey and seeing how much more volume we can get? Because I'd rather make 5% profit. And again, a 5% profit, meaning all that additional money, that 20% loss, is at a complete loss. Like, if we don't generate any more sales. Yeah. But if we're willing to reinvest some of that money into the growth of the business, let's say we lose 20 cents on the dollar up front. Instead of making 25% profit on $2K a day, mm-hmm. what if I can make 5% profit on like 20? Well, I'd much rather have a more profit volume. Like MER, ROAS, contribution margin, all look worse. Except my bank account looks phenomenally better. And fun thing, when you focus around doing one thing well and you drive a higher volume of it, you're also going to get to a place where it's a lot easier to manage. And your tests are going to happen a lot faster. It's very difficult to improve the second purchase rate if you make 3 sales a day. It's a hell of a lot easier to improve it if you make 300. Because yeah, you're getting more data. You get more volume. Yeah. You get more reps. Yeah. So you can improve the operations of your business faster by focusing on the thing that's best for your business. So if you're promoting, say, 5 different products, understand 4 of those products are bad for you. And ultimately, promoting all 5 of them means that you are dumber and slower, making less money and working far harder than you should. For me, that works in Amazon. That works in Google. That works if I have a finite number of dollars and the purpose of Facebook is to just sell at a profit with a lot of SKUs because my business isn't really e-com. Say I have a retail store and I just have some ads up. Awesome. I just want to get profit volume because I don't really have a large scale business. That's what Advantage Plus is for. It's to make small businesses easier to adopt Facebook. Mm-hmm. But if I'm trying to build an 8-figure company and I'm using cost caps in Advantage Plus, I'm by definition producing fatigue, which is depreciation. Yep. I'm investing in depreciating assets to work harder to make less money than I could. That for me, I see brands that are successful doing that. I see agencies that are successful at doing that. Generally, it's because the business is good.
Most good agencies are actually doing that.
I would say, generally speaking, where I see that working really well is when the business is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
like I got a lot of heat for this, where I called out a company that is doing 9 figures now, mm-hmm. founded by a Wall Street trader with 20 years in the business, that teamed up with a celebrity, built a business around what that celebrity is famous for using every single day, what they use in their own home.
Yeah.
That business is going to succeed, even if the ad agency uses cost caps and Advantage Plus, focusing on MER ROAS. It's not because of the agency. And I know this for a fact because I wasted $17 million 1 year for Activision, and Call of Duty was still the number one game. And I've done that kind of problem over and over again. Like, I've learned a lot by wasting a lot of money. But the point is, people define success poorly. You might say, well, I'm doing all of that. I'm getting a 2X growth. Fantastic. If you focused on one product and you could increase your budget by, say, 5% 3 times a week, you could see 2X growth every month. What you're bragging about doing in a year is something I could do in 30 days. And I'm going to work a lot less than you. So I think we need to start reframing how people define success. Because I think, like I said before, they're valuing the wrong metrics, defining success in the wrong way, and ultimately asking the wrong questions. And I see a lot of people patting themselves on the back for getting 20% of what they could do and working 10 times harder than they need to make it happen. And that's really my point, is not that it's inherently bad sometimes, but if you could be more successful, more stable, grow faster with less work, you could either have more clients, or you could make more money, or you could just work less. And it'd be a lot easier for your client to operate their business. I would rather choose the path of more money, less work, easier operations than trying to easily project ROAS and contribution margin and try to figure out how to make a lot more money with Facebook ads when really my job is how do I amplify this very successful business model?
I think that's ultimately
the crux of the problem is people mm-hmm. don't know what their job actually is.
You're a very conceptual person. I have to admit this. Like, I didn't foresee this, that our conversation was going to shift immediately from the get-go into like more conceptual stuff. But I really liked it because this is giving so much food for thought, I think, for everyone that's like watching this, because you as a Facebook expert just said fix your business
mm-hmm.
before fixing your ad account, actually.
Yeah.
Even before that.
Yeah, and like, and to be fair, like your business, if your business is broken, you don't even know what's wrong with your ad account. If you have no idea what's wrong, how are you going to fix it?
True.
You're going to say, oh, well, I've got vanity metrics. I'm going to make my report look good so that I don't get fired. Okay, and we have to understand, like, there's a reason why. And believe me, I used to be supervisor of West Coast operations for Omnicom, managing seven figures at least a day. Like, I get agencies shit, right? Like, I've been in a lot of them. I've accidentally started a few over the years. Like, I get it. Your job is to not get fired in the first 90 days. That's your job. After that, if the client is good enough, then, like, hopefully you keep that relationship. But I think there is inherently in that style of relationship, because your job is to prove value quickly.
Yeah.
Your relationship isn't long enough to focus on building a business.
That's true. And that's true. But then maybe the agency's job is not to build your business.
Yeah. And that's why I think people, if you're hiring somebody, if I'm a brand, and I'm hiring an agency to spend my money on Facebook, and their objective is to not bring me more money than I give them, why am I making that investment?
Well, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So if you're hiring an agency and your goal isn't to grow the business, then it's a liability to your balance sheet.
Oh, I completely agree with this.
So if your agency's conversations with you are not about increasing your balance sheet
mm-hmm.
and looking at your balance sheet as a reflection of success, not in platform metrics, then I'd argue there's a misalignment. And I think, to be fair, a lot of brands are not sophisticated enough to appreciate that, because most brand owners are listening to what most people have to say, and the vast majority of people that are trying to tell people what they should care about don't give a damn about the clients. They're just trying to make their own money by looking good. Like, the hustle culture flex nonsense that defines probably 98% of the small dick energy world that is digital marketing is fucking toxic. And if you start looking at business as, how can I do more good? And how can I lift up my team? You're going to work a lot less and make a lot more money. And that is, to me, what is most valuable. That's at the core of what I teach at Disruptor School. That's what the MBA program is all about. And that's why I've been a really bad employee. I've been fired from every ad agency I've ever been at. And every brand where I was working in-house, I've had exponential growth.
Mm-hmm.
Like 310 Nutrition in 2017. 15 million to 100. Went to My Life, got their advertising from $60 CPL to 12. The daily spend from 3K to 50. Ultimately cut spend by 30K a day to get an extra $12 million EBITDA on the balance sheet like that. Under Outfit, like last year, right? Came into the MBA program at 50K a month. We did more revenue in January of 2023 to more customers at a higher AOV than in the entire year of 2021. Like 4 million plus in January versus 3 million in 2021. Like 50K a month to over a million a week. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a rinse and repeat process if you get your shit together. I just think most people have been taught by individuals that don't know what they're talking about and don't care about the bottom line to value the wrong metrics, ask the wrong questions, and ultimately think about data in the wrong way. And my whole goal is to shine a light on that because, well, one way makes money and the other way is a really profitable business for folks that have to rely on a sales team. I would rather grow the bottom line than create harm at scale as an operating procedure for my business. That's the way that I look at it.
I really want to thank you for this. And I just have a few other questions that are quicker. I would say it's like a blitz question.
Sure, I got 5 minutes for everyone.
Yes, perfect.
Okay.
Where are you getting it? If you're a marketer or e-com store owner, what are the sources of information that you're going to look at? What are you reading? Where are you doing that?
Can you say that one more time?
If you're an e-com store owner or digital marketer, what would you be reading, or where? What are your sources of information? Like, is it going to be Twitter or specific people? Like, where are you getting inspired and getting new knowledge?
Great question. I'm finding the people that are most successful, and I'm asking them to tell me what everything they did that was wrong. So, like, I love, like, watching The Operators, for instance, right? Or listening to them, and I'm friends with some of those guys. And, like, it's great to hear how Sean built Ridge. I want to know, like, cool, Sean, that's how I run a nine-figure business. If I want to get to 20K a day, how much of what you just said is a complete liability to me?
Mm-hmm.
That's way more important information. So I just do that at scale. Like, find everybody that's been successful and ask them everything they did wrong. Like, I know how to be successful because I've probably made $500 million of mistakes on Facebook. Like, easily $500 million of mistakes. And I've built $100 million businesses basically every year. So that's where I'm looking for information. And I love people that challenge what I have to say and are willing to have a back and forth. Because that's where you really learn. People saying, good job, I agree. You don't learn anything from that. So I actively seek out the people that challenge my notions and are willing to talk about it. And I think that comes across as being very disruptive or contrarian, but it's just like, I want to get better. And I'm not going to get
what
better.
We just did
my sword by listening
I
to people.
Think
that
what we just
it.
Did with this episode, like everyone that's going to watch it and listen to it is going to have this battle in their mind with you.
Love it.
And they're going to be challenging their beliefs and the way that they're operating their business. So I really want to thank you for this. It's a great opener for season 2 of 2 Ecom Experts. And Charles, again, thanks. And I just want to say to everyone, follow Charles on his social media accounts. He's posting so much content nowadays. Quite interesting. And you know what? I'm challenging you to message him and tell him, hey, you're not right with this. You fucked up here. You fucked up there.
Oh, please.
And
if you see something that I say and it doesn't make sense, or you found it to be different in your case and you have evidence to back it up and want to have a conversation, I can't spend my time doing anything more valuable than that. Because that's what's going to help me provide more good for everybody else, which is what allows me to feed my family and pay my bills and helps me get better. So if you don't agree with me, or if you have data and want to have a conversation, reach out to me. I'm on every social media platform. I post multiple times a day. And if you have a social media platform that I'm not on, you tell me about it and I'll make sure to post more often than anybody else with better information than anybody else has. I'll make it happen tomorrow.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it. I'm very thankful for your time. And again, I hope this makes a couple people think. And if we make a couple people think and we change the lives of like one or two people, that's massive. If we can do more, even better.
We're going to do even more. Thank you very much. And stay tuned for the next episodes.
See ya.